Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan. We'll start off today with some true medical file histories from a South African radio program called Medical File. The episode we have in mind for you is Life in the Dark, and it's from 1969. And after that, we'll lighten the mood a bit with two episodes of Jack Kirkwood. They're 15 minutes apiece. One of them is about another hillbilly drama and a mystery show. Both of those are from 1945. Right now, Medical File.
This is a true story taken from an actual medical file.
They put the tray down there, nurse. Well, Jim, we're going to remove the bandages and change the dressings. It could be that you'll be able to see a little this morning, be able to observe some faint outlines. On the other hand, it may be early yet, too early. Whatever it is, I don't want you to be disappointed.
I don't know about being disappointed, Doctor. Right now, I'm just plain scared.
That morning of September the 4th, 1956, I'd been 12 years in the dark. Perhaps I'd grown used to it, grown to depend on it, built my way of life around it. I hadn't seen for 12 years, and all the people who made up my existence were people whose faces I had never known. Was it strange that, for one frightened moment, I wanted to leave the bandages alone and let that world of mine stay undisturbed?
Bristol Myers, makers of Clairol hair care products, Ipana toothpaste, and Score Clear Hair Cream for Men, take great pleasure in presenting Medical File. Factual stories of the men and women whose vigilance guards our lives. A reconstruction of clinical case histories, step by step with the doctors who were there. Tonight, you'll hear the story Life in the Dark in Medical File.
Anti-cavity Ipana toothpaste has a secret weapon against decay. Its unique tooth defenders set up a germ-proof defense around each tooth. Ipana's germ barrier stays put for hours, won't rinse or wash away.
We're against tooth decay. That's why we're for anti-cavity Ipana.
Join the Ipana Brigade!
Clear Score, a clean winner! The clean look is in, man, in. Greasy hair is out, man, out.
Score room is clean, rules break free, man, you score.
Man, you need Score, the water-mixable hair groom that says goodbye to greasy hair. Break free, man, use Score.
Score room is clean, rules break free, man, you score.
Christmas Eve, 1944. Somewhere, I suppose, they were singing carols in the streets. But not where we were. We'd been attacking the hill since the first light of that day. Now it was late afternoon.
Somebody doesn't get that blasted gun up on the hill, it's going to get us.
Take it easy, Eddie. They're trying. They've been trying all day.
Unmissed machine gunners and a stinking mortar. And we're held up out here in the open.
It's never easy to take a hill like this one.
Stupid fools shining up their pants. Couldn't they have planned a way to go round it? Look out!
Oh, that was close.
Too darn close. We're like sitting ducks.
Here's another. Get down.
They've got the range.
Where's Morgan?
Steve, find out from Morgan what's happening.
Yes, either we go forward or back, but let's get out of here.
Look out there! Eddie, down! You all right in there? Hey, Eddie. Jim. You all right?
Oh, brother.
Hey, stretcher bears. Stretcher bears!
And these two we've kept on liquid diet, sir.
Good. Now, about this man here.
Private James Wilson, C Company, 221st Battalion.
Let me see that card, will you?
Oh, here, Major.
Oh, thanks. Well, Private Wilson, how do you feel today?
I'd feel a lot better if somebody told me whereabouts I am.
You're in base hospital. I'm Major Lewis. You were brought down here from the emergency field station 2 days ago.
Base hospital? It feels good.
Then you're feeling better.
Anything would be better than being up there.
Pretty bad, I hear.
Bad enough for me. I'm no hero.
Who is?
What have they got these bandages around my face for?
You were injured by a mortar explosion. There's been some damage to your eyes.
Oh, yes. They hurt like the devil. So does my head.
You very nearly didn't make it, Wilson. According to your card, a shell exploded almost on top of you.
What about the others? Eddie Thompson, Steve, rest of my patrol.
We don't know anything here. Just relax now, Private. Get plenty of rest.
How bad are my eyes?
We won't know for a while yet.
Am I going to be able to see?
Now, that's a question I can hardly answer.
Why not?
Because I'd prefer to leave it for the experts. Now, don't worry, Wilson. You've had a bad time, and your eyes have been affected in some way by that explosion. That I won't deny.
Why are the bandages on? For heaven's sake, why won't somebody tell me?
You've had a slight operation. When you were brought in, there were shell fragments in each eye. Small ones. They had to be removed. Don't worry, Wilson. You'll get the best attention we can possibly give you.
Three weeks later, mid-January 1945, I was invalided back to the General Hospital. There were bandages still around my eyes. I'd been in the dark ever since that moment on Christmas Eve. And when they finally removed the bandages, I was still in the dark. They took them off one morning. I could hear the birds singing outside the windows of the ward. Somehow I knew the sun was shining, but I didn't see it. No, that wasn't the first time I knew I was blind. I think I'd known it all along. That day was simply the day that hope ran out.
Sit down here, Wilson. Can you make it? There's the chair.
I'll make it.
Yes, we're good men.
Oh, I'm getting quite expert. Another few months and I'll be an authority on all kinds of things. Like finding my way in the dark and sensing when people are near and making baskets.
We've put you through a lot of tests.
The lot, surely. It seems like weeks you've been testing me for one thing or another.
Well, it is weeks.
Does it amount to anything?
I've got some news for you, Wilson.
You don't have to take it easily with me, Doc. I've known for weeks that I'm blind, and I'm going to stay blind. Well, aren't I?
The right eye will have to be removed.
Removed?
Yes, have to be taken out. It's been injured beyond repair. By leaving it in, we only take pointless risks.
And the other eye? The left?
Well, there's an operation which entails removal of the cataract-clouded lens. I think we could perform that in 4 or 5 months' time. There's no reason at all why it shouldn't be partially successful.
Partially?
So that you can distinguish light and shade and see large objects from a close distance.
Well, that would be something.
It's not a lot. I wish I could promise more.
I was 8 months in hospital before the operations were finally complete. At the end of that time, my vision was about 5/200ths. It meant that from 5 feet away, I could see the big letter E at the top of the sight chart. 5 feet. I should have been able to see it from 200. November 1945. I was due to leave hospital. I had a last examination from Dr. Bitson.
Well, Jim, we're going to miss your cheery face around here. And I'm not kidding, it is a cheerful face. A lot different to when you came here.
Yes, a year nearly. You get to accept things.
Yes, I know.
What's the eye look like now, Doc?
About the same, Jim. We can detect scraps of metal floating around the inside of the eye, and there's a membrane of scar tissue blocking your sight. But the answer is still the same, Jim. We can't operate any further for fear of destroying the sight of the eye completely.
Look, Doctor, I'm as good as blind. I can't read. I have to count steps so I won't fall down. I can't walk in crowds without help. Don't you think I might like to take that risk?
It'd be a risk for no purpose, Jim. The operation wouldn't succeed.
I see.
Yes, you keep on getting flashes of hope, don't you? Like the time you heard about those corneal transplants.
The time you had to explain to me that was only for people with a scarred or diseased cornea of the eye. But my trouble was deeper.
Jim, we've been over all this before. I'm a lot more interested in what you're going to do when you get out of here.
Well, let's see if you react like all the others.
Hmm?
I'm going back to college to study. I want to go on with the course I had to drop when I joined up. I want to be a school teacher.
That's fine.
You didn't laugh.
Why should I?
You know why you should. You know why the others did. A blind man going back to school.
I think it's pretty wonderful.
Thank God you said that.
Jim...
I was beginning to think I was the only one who believed it possible. I was beginning to think that perhaps I was stepping too high.
You get in there and show them. And Jim...
Yes?
I hope we run into each other someday.
So do I, Doctor. Yes, so do I.
Sit down, Mr. Wilson. There. Can I help you?
No, it's all right, thank you, sir.
Wilson, I'm going to wish you the same as I wish every student at the beginning of a new year. I'm going to wish you luck.
Thank you, Professor.
We have to discuss your handicap for a few moments now to make certain arrangements. And thereafter, we won't refer to it again.
That's the way I want it, sir.
You'll be treated like any other student. If you fail to turn up at your lectures, you'll get short shift from me, the same as anyone else.
Thank you, sir.
Now then, you're going to need somebody to help you in your reading. I understand you have a slight amount of vision.
I might be able to read big headline print with a magnifying glass.
Then obviously you're going to need help. Can you afford to pay someone?
Yes, sir. I have my college fees paid and a full pension.
Well, there are plenty of students working their way through and others anxious to supplement their spending money. I don't think we'll have any trouble getting someone to read with you and help you study. I look through the list and see who's put their name down for additional college posts.
Come in. Yes? Who is it?
Mr. Wilson, I'm Ann Field. Professor Norman said you need a reader.
Oh, will you sit down, Miss Field? I'm afraid the room's in a bit of a mess. I've been trying to put my clothes away.
You sit down. Let me do it.
Now, hold on a moment. I want to employ you as a reader. Not a professional valet.
Never mind, just for one. Sit down and let me take care of it.
I don't have to be helped.
Oh, when it comes to unpacking clothes, all men have to be helped. And you're no different to anyone else.
I'm glad you said that.
Well, you're not, are you? Sit down and stop arguing. Let me fix this mess.
Her name was Ann Field. And she was 22 years old. She had a way of helping me do things that never made me awkward or embarrassed, the way it so often did with others. We studied English and history together, and she read my textbooks for me all that autumn and winter, and the following spring. The end of the year celebration was our engagement party. A few months later, we were married. For the first time since that day in Italy, when I lost my sight, I could see that there was going to be a future.
Clear score, a clean winner. The clean look is in, man, in. Greasy hair is out, man, out.
Score room is clean, room break free, man, you score.
Man, you need Score, the water mixable hair groom that says goodbye to greasy hair. Break free, man, use Score.
Score room is clean, room break free, man, you score. Cavity campaign. Join the
Ipana
Brigade.
New anti-cavity Ipana toothpaste has a secret weapon against decay. Its unique tooth defenders set up a germ-proof defense around each tooth. Ipana's germ barrier stays put for hours, won't rinse or wash away.
We're against tooth decay. That's why we're for anti-cavity Ipana.
Join the Ipana Brigade.
As English master at a small private school, I stayed there 2 years and then applied for and was accepted at a larger and better known college. I was learning to live with my handicap, but it was still an ordeal to meet people for the first time, especially someone like Henry Miller, the principal of Leicester College, who called me for an interview when my application was first being considered.
Well, let's discuss this quite frankly, Mr. Wilson. Just what degree of vision do you have at the present time?
Well, sir, when I left hospital in 1945, it was 5/200. I think it may be a little less than that now.
In fact, very little vision at all.
Yes, I'm afraid very little.
Yet the principal of your former school has given you a splendid reference. How do you manage it? Correcting study papers, for instance.
My wife went through college with me, sir. She reads the papers, and we mark them together.
And during class, how do you manage?
Memory. I know the syllabus by heart. I very soon get to know my students by their voices. It's worked out during the past few years. I think it can go on working.
I'm sure it can. Believe me, I was most impressed by your application. The job is open to you, Wilson.
Thank you, sir.
You will start at the beginning of term next week. And, by the way, we all have handicaps. I've got a gammy leg. Welcome to Leicester College, Mr. Wilson. I'm looking forward to working with you.
In 1950, I went to teach at Leicester College. I was still there 6 years later. I don't think it would be sheer emotion that makes me say those were the happiest years of my life. Somehow, all the things I'd ever wanted to be and do were there at Leicester. I was happy in my work, in my associates, relaxed and at ease with my students, and very much in love with my wife. I lived in the dark, but I was never alone.
Not much in the paper tonight, darling. The government being attacked again.
Nothing that won't be on the late night news bulletin. Oh, well, I'd better get you to go over those exam corrections, Anne. Young Rayner and Hendricks are coming round about it.
Seems to me we have at least a couple of your students around here nearly every night.
You don't mind, do you?
Mind? I love it. If it's not one of the boys, it's another master. And everyone who drops by makes me realize what a success you've made of this, Jim.
I couldn't have done it without your help.
You couldn't have done it without being the kind of person you are. I'll get those exam papers.
Thank you, my dear.
Strange.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I just noticed a name here in the paper. Benson, Dr. Gordon Benson.
Benson? Now, that was the name of the surgeon in the Army Hospital.
Listen. Visiting eye surgeon, Dr. Gordon Benson, who is in the city to give a series of lectures on new ophthalmic advances, dined yesterday with a select group of doctors when plans for a new eye clinic at the Royal Hospital were discussed. Oh, Jim, it sounds very like the same man.
You know, I think it is. Jove, he's come on in the world.
Yes, hasn't he?
Oh, Benson. He wasn't a bad sort. I remember he said he hoped we'd run into each other someday. Fancy me remembering that. Oh, it must be all of 12 years ago.
Why don't you drop him a line?
Well, if he's dining with a select group of doctors and lecturing, he won't want to be bothered with an old case history who happens to have become a school teacher.
Oh, I don't know. I think you're a very special old case history.
I doubt if he does. Benson must have had thousands of patients like me.
Well, just the same, he might like to hear. Why not write him a note? Send it care of the university.
Oh, I suppose I could.
Here, before your students turn up, I'll run a piece of paper into your portable and you can dictate something.
You're very keen on this, aren't you? Look, Anne, don't get any ideas, darling.
Like what?
Like thinking that an eye specialist lecturing on advances in eye surgery might be able to do something for me.
Well, he might.
He made that point plain 12 years ago. There's nothing that can be done.
All right, Jim. Then we won't get any ideas. But let's drop him a line just the same.
We sent a letter off to Dr. Benson, and an answer came the following day. If I thought he'd forgotten me in a mass of case histories since then, I was far from right. He came to dinner two nights later, and he not only remembered, he was still interested. He insisted on making an examination while dinner was being prepared, and afterwards, over coffee, brought up the subject again.
You know, Jim, this is what I really enjoy. Meeting a man after so many years, finding him a success in every possible way. Yes, I remember when you left hospital, you were going to try and become a teacher. I often wondered what had happened to you.
Here's the reason for my success, Doctor.
Oh, yes, I can well believe it.
Now, that's not true. I only helped. Jim did the toughest parts alone. Like standing in front of a class he couldn't see for the first time. That takes a special kind of courage.
You've never seen your wife?
Only as a blurred shape.
Jim, when I examined your eye before dinner, I must confess I was, well, rather surprised.
Why, Doctor?
Because it's in such good condition. I would have expected deterioration, but, well, there's hardly any. Yes, do you know, I think we ought to operate.
What?
Operate, Dr. Benson?
I think there's a very good chance of improving the vision.
But you said 12 years ago...
Ah, yes, yes, Jim. 12 years ago, we didn't know about this new technique. The membrane that was formed at the time of your injury is what's blocking the sight. Well, I could cut through it. Now, the operation itself is quite simple. We've been doing it successfully over the past few years.
Yes, but what if it didn't work?
Then there's just a chance you'd lose the sight of the eye completely.
It's my last one. It may be only about 5% effective, but I'd be worse off without it.
I'd say the chances are 70 to 30 in favor of success. Oh, but look here, why don't you and Anne talk it over and give me an answer in a few days' time?
Do we need to talk about it?
No. No, I don't suppose we do. This was in the back of Anne's mind when she wrote to you, Doctor. Mine too, I suppose. Although I wasn't going to admit it. If there's a chance for me to see again, I want to take it. How soon can you operate? The operation took place 2 days later, and 72 hours after that, the bandages were removed. I'll admit it, I was scared. All the people who made up my existence were people whose faces I had never seen more than as a blurred outline. I was scared of what I was going to see, and scared of not being able to see at all. And then the bandages came off, and all at once, I knew everything was going to be all right.
Jim?
Why didn't you tell me you were beautiful?
Oh, but I'm not.
the loveliest thing I've ever seen. Just stand there, darling. Don't move away. I want to go on looking.
Well, you're going to be able to look for the rest of your life, Jim. Now, how about letting me make a small examination?
You look fine, too, Doc.
Thanks.
Is it going to last? I mean, really last?
Yes, it's going to last, Jim, all your life. You'll need strong glasses, of course, but you'll see as well as anyone else. Now, we're putting the bandages back on until the wounds heal completely. You'll just have to be patient for a few more days.
4 days after that, and the bandages came off for the last time. That afternoon, September the 8th, 1956, I went through my last examination from Dr. Benson and heard the final words of reassurance.
Wounds all healed, Jim. Vision is improved 75%. Well, I'm leaving for my hometown tomorrow, but you'll be perfectly all right now.
There's no way I can thank you, Doc.
No. Thanks aren't needed. I'm only sorry we didn't meet like this a few years ago. Perhaps we could have restored your sight that much sooner.
I've no regrets. Those 12 years in the dark taught me a new way to live. I think I'll be all the better for it.
Yes, I'm sure you will.
Oh, by the way, there's quite a view from this window.
Now he's showing off, Dr. Benson. Hmm? He's been staring at everything all over town like a country cousin.
What's so interesting down there, Jim?
I see by the neon sign across the street that they serve drinks. How about coming along and joining in a small celebration?
Anti-cavity Ipana toothpaste has a secret weapon against decay. Its unique tooth defenders set up a germ-proof defense around each tooth. Ipana's germ barrier stays put for hours, won't rinse or wash away.
We're against tooth decay. That's why we're for anti-cavity Ipana.
Join the Ipana Brigade!
Clear score! A clean winner! The clean look is in, man, in. Greasy hair is out, man, out.
Score room is clean, room break free, man, you score.
Man, you need Score, the water mixable hair groom that says goodbye to greasy hair. Break free, man, use Score.
Score room is clean, room break free, man, you score.
Medical File, the documented story of the men and women who in hospitals, research centers, and lonely surgeries guard our lives. Tonight's story was directed by John Seeliger and produced by David Manley. Listen again next week for another true story from Medical File.
For those of you who are Jack Kirkwood fans, your time is here. Here's two episodes of Jack Kirkwood.
Boys, I'm surprised.
I'm Kirkwood.
I'm Lee.
I'm Harris.
I'm Wallington.
Well, how do you do?
And this is the Jack Kirkwood Show.
Hey, you.
Are you listening?
Gentlemen, you've heard of people who like to stand around and watch a steam shovel? Well, here's a man who likes people to watch while he stands around and shovels steam, Jack Kirkwood.
Oh, thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Jimmy Wallington. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sorry I'm late. I had to go shopping with my wife. She bought herself a nice outfit and a new fur coat.
Nice fur, too. Unborn bath mat, I think it is. She bought me a suit, too, a sports suit, $7.95. For a dollar extra, they sew it together. Looked kind of shop-worn to me, and after looking it over, I said to the man, what are those little insects in the seams? He said, silkworms. It ain't quite finished yet. I said, that's a funny color. What do you call that shade? He said, that's the new fudge brown. You can have it plain or with nuts. The thing I like best about my outfit is the tie, though. My wife did it herself. That's the first time I ever saw a tie with sleeves. But I like it. She said she'd like to have bought me more things, but we have to live according to the budget. Budget, that's French for let's do without it and put it on the horse. I'd like to run up a good score on laughs tonight.
I'd like to run up the country.
I'd like to run up the street for a new dress.
Well, Lillian Lee, I'll help you do it, Lil. Help you run up the street. I have my portable sewing machine right here.
Gee, thanks, Jack.
Don't mention it. Just grab that side over there by the curb. Careful, I'll just knock off this sidewalk. Good, now we slide it in the machine. Now I'll run up the street for you. There you are. How's that?
Oh, gee, that's swell. And you know what?
What?
I'll bet I'm the only woman in Hollywood with a lamppost in her bustle.
I hope you won't tell anyone how handy I am with this sewing machine. They'll think it's a low pursuit.
Hello, Kirkwood.
Low pursuit? How's Mrs. Pursuit?
Still leading me a Mary Chase.
Oh, dear old Mary Chase. I haven't seen her for a long time. You mind if I wring your neck? My doorbell's out of order.
Not at all, but I wish...
Excuse me, Tommy. Jack, could I speak to you alone, please?
Sure. What's up, Wallington?
Oh, it's awful. I'm being sued.
For what?
Well, breach of promise, you said.
Thanks, lads. You really did that one up brown. A nice blues number, too. And it went very well with your red noses. And now here comes our servicemen special, pretty little Jeannie McKeon, who has thrilled millions of listeners in Washington, Oregon, California, and all points east. Jeannie has since learned it isn't polite to point. She will now thrill us with... Yeah, betcha. Well, go ahead.
Well, I miss ya, you betcha, every minute of the hour. Well, I miss ya, you betcha, till you come marching home. Well, I write ya, you betcha, you don't have to worry about me. I will write a letter nightly, till you come marching home. I'll put my heart upon the shelf, on that you can rely. I'll stay at home all by myself. I love you, darling, you're my guy. Will I wait, dear? You betcha. Will I wait for you forever till it's over? You betcha. And you come marching home. Till you come marching home, I'll put my heart upon the shelf. On that you can rely. I'll stay at home all by myself. Love you, darling, you're my guy. Will I wait, dear, you betcha? Will I wait for come marching home.
Jenny, that was great. It really stopped the show. Now I'm wondering how I'll get it started again. No, Kitty, Judy, I like it because it brought us right to the Madhouse Little Theater.
Kirkwood!
You!
Today, the Madhouse comedy, drama, and if you must laugh, please do it in the right place, players, present another chapter in the lives of the Jeeper Coonies, of the Kentucky Hill Coonies. As the curtain rises, we find Paw Cooney sprawled in the middle of the floor. Ma Cooney is rocking in her favorite chair by the window. Curtain, music!
Pa, there's a spider crawling down your back.
Poisonous one, Ma?
Reckon so. Looks like a black widow.
Wish you'd find out for sure. I hate to go wasting my strength swinging at a harmless one.
Can't tell now, Pa. He just went down inside your shirt. There he comes out. Doggone, he ain't black no more. He's all white.
Yeah, I reckon that chipmunk I keep down there must have scared him. Ma, I hate to keep mentioning it all the time, but I'm hungry again.
Oh, Pa, Cooney, I just fed you yesterday. That's all you think about, eating and sleeping and sleeping and eating. You don't care how hard I work. You don't think you love me no more.
I do, too. I love the ground you walk on. Looks like you got most of it on you, too.
It's nice to hear you say it, Pa.
I'm always saying nice things.
Oh, Pa.
Yeah.
Will you still love me when I'm old and ugly?
I sure do, Ma. Unlatch and trek in.
Hello, folks.
Pop right through the door, too. I think that door's thin. We couldn't hear you at all. What you been up to, daughter? Your face looks clean.
I ain't your daughter. I'm Cindy Lou Scroggins. I came over to borrow your horsewhip for my grandmother.
Now, what could...
I'm an animal mule with her or something.
Now, what could your poor little frail old grandmother do with a horsewhip?
She has a canary, and it refuses to sing.
Hey, God darn it. It's that boy feuding again. Oh, get out of the way, gal. Get away from that window. Doggone it, that bullet went right through Cindy Lou's head.
Aw, shucks. It's all right. Does feel a mite drafty, though. Reckon I'd better go home and plug it up. Bye, folks.
Bye. Sure. Yes, sir. Sure, a lot of shooting. I hope Effie ain't out there.
Effie? Who's Effie?
That's our daughter, Pa.
Dagnabbit, another one?
Effie was our firstborn, Pa. Oh. Don't you remember? The one with only 10 toes?
Oh, sure. The failure. The one all them traveling freak shows kept turning down. What was they called her, Ma?
Normal, I think it was.
Too bad.
I better call her. What was her name?
Whose name?
Effie's.
Never heard of it. I don't think I know it.
Doggone, I knew it just a minute ago. Sarah, no. Esmeralda, Katrinka, Effie. Yeah. That's it, Effie.
Effie. Effie.
Effie.
Effie.
Oh, Effie.
Oh, Effie. Effie. Your ma's calling you. Get up here, so I'll dig it.
I'm a coming.
Well, hurry up.
Say, Pa.
What?
There's a stranger coming up the road. I can tell he ain't no revenue, though.
Wow.
He ain't got no bullet holes in him.
Oh, well, it's all right, then. Unlatch, trek in. Howdy.
Oh, are you one of them city fellers?
Yes.
My ma told me all about you, Slickers.
She did?
Yep. Come on in.
That's my daughter. What do you think of her? You're a gentleman.
You've sure got a lot of children, haven't you? I saw a yard full of them when I came up.
Yeah, before the feuding started, we was running the rabbits around here a close second.
Well, that's what I came up here to talk to you about. You want to keep them alive, don't you?
I don't know. Why?
Oh, Pa Cooney, of course we do, stranger.
Of course we do.
Well, then you'd better buy some of these can't-miss bullets I'm selling. Only 50 cents a box. The coys just bought some.
Oh, that's where they got them, eh? Okay, stranger. Them coys ain't going to get ahead of us. We'll take a box.
Sure nice of you to come around. How about staying for victuals?
Well,
me and Effie will whip up something.
Effie? Who's Effie, Ma?
Effie's our daughter.
Doggone, every time I turn around, there's another one. There go them boys are shooting at us again. Hey, can you look out the window and see what's happening, Ma?
Yep. They got Luke and Clem.
Oh, my.
Uh-oh. There goes Ty.
Oh, gosh. I'm awful scared we're going to lose this feud. Don't know how long our young ones will hold out. Say, stranger, how many bullets did them coys buy?
Well, they bought a box with 25 in it.
Only 25? Doggone, that's great. We can't lose the feud.
Why not, Paul?
We got more kids than they got bullets.
I've been finished. It would have been in a little Spanish town. It was delivered by Butch Miller and his hams, otherwise known as 12 Meatballs. I know I'm a going.
Armed Forces Radio Service.
I'm surprised.
I'm Kirkwood.
I'm Lee.
I'm Harris.
I'm Wallington.
Well, how do you do?
And this is the Jack Kirkwood Show.
Hey, you!
Are you listening?
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've all heard of the newest argument among scientific men, whether the world is round or egg-shaped. Well, here's an egg shaped like a man who's been around too long, Jack Kirkland.
Thank you, Jimmy Wallach, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I was almost late again this evening. I stopped on the way over to see an old girlfriend of mine. Her name is Ann. Ann Nuts.
No good either way.
She sure is the skinniest dame I ever saw. Boy, what a figure. When we were kids, we nicknamed her Snake Hips on account of the way her hips rattled. Now, everywhere she walks, she's followed by sailors. They're sure a crap game is going on somewhere. But she really is a colorful character. She's the only girl I know who has blue eyes, brown hair, purple lips, and yellow jaundice. Very colorful. But don't get me wrong, she has plenty of S.A. That stands for sax appeal. You put a lot of sacks over her, she appeals to you. In fact, I finally put her into a sack and was heading for the river, but she kicked up such a row, I let the old cat out of the bag. Right over here. And I'd like to go along at a steady pace tonight.
I'd like to go along and steady you on your way home tonight.
I'll need it.
I'd like to go along and steady with Van Johnson, starting tonight.
Well, Lily Lee, why are you all daydreaming about actors?
Oh, I don't know. There just seems to be something so glamorous about them.
Glamorous? Oh, yes, that's right. I'm an actor. I ought to know. All it takes is courage, ability, good contacts, an agent, a publicity man, and $3 in the bank.
Why $3 in the bank?
If I had any more, I wouldn't be an actor.
Ah, you're silly.
No, I'm Kirkwood.
In the wintertime, in the valley green, when the snow is snowing, on the windowpane, and the fat lady in the vaudeville, ride lots of feet upon the windowsill.
Very good. It's four different keys. We transpose at sight. Green fake, too. Double the cotton patch. Do you mind if I go to work in this garter factory? I want a job that's a soft snap. Hey, what's all the rumpus going on out there in the hall?
Oh, some fellow, I don't know who he is, keeps calling you a bum.
Me, a bum? Let me at him. Where is he?
Take it easy, pal. I'm right here.
Hello there, my good man. Aren't you the cab driver who brought me over to the studio this afternoon?
Yeah, that's right. Now, how about paying for the ride? Now, come on, pay for the ride.
Oh, the ride. Oh, yes. Say, how would you like to be on the radio? Can you sing?
Sure, I can sing.
Go ahead. That's much better than Harris does. Hey, Harris.
Yes, Jack.
Now, how about taking over the melody department while I step out and make a phone call? Ladies and gentlemen, Tommy Harris will hack his way through a little thing called If I Had You. Sing it nicely.
I could show the world how to smile. I could be glad all of the while. I could change the gray skies to blue if I had you. I could leave the old days behind, leave all my pals I'd never mind. I could start my life all anew if I had you. I could climb the snow-capped mountains, sail the mighty ocean wide. I could cross the burning desert if I had you by my side. I could be a king, dear, uncrowned, humble or poor, rich or renowned. There is nothing I couldn't do. If I had you.
Thank you, Tommy. Thank you. That was just about what I expected. So I wasn't disappointed. Much. No kidding, Tommy. I liked it, and it brought us right to the madhouse, little theater.
Tonight, the madhouse comedy, drama, and a whole bunch of other stuff that we can't do over the air players bring us an action-packed adventure of life along the African veldt. Deep in the heart of the belching Congo, we find Professor Kirkwood and the Frobisher Neep expedition forging ever onward in the search for the missing scientist, J. Dangle Punkley. As the scene opens, our little party is preparing to resume its journey after being held up several days by a driving rainstorm. Curtain?
Well, We may as well push on, Chief. Looks like it stopped raining.
Yep, I guess it has.
Hey! What's the idea of putting a hole through my head?
Sorry, you were standing in the light. I wanted to see if the sun was out. We can't move until Lady Gwendolyn gets back, though. I wonder what's keeping her.
Here she comes now, Chief.
Oh, Professor! Oh, I thought I'd never see you again. Hmm. What a frightful experience.
Sure.
I was chased for miles by a dreadful monster.
Maybe it was the same one that chased me.
What did it look like?
It was a serpent in front and a dragon in the rear.
Well, maybe it'd been on its feet all day. Gad, I wish I had some milk to drink. We haven't had any for months. Come on, let's get out of here. Got the camel started, Harris?
Yes, Chief.
Fine, give me a drag over, will you?
Come on, Chief. Let's find Jane Dangle Punkley. What are you waiting for?
Half-hour program. It's possible. You're right, though, Harris. Come on. Let's all look for some mint sauce.
Mint sauce? What for?
So we can take it on the lamb. I love it.
3 days later, we find our little group still trudging wearily through the jungle. Finally, realizing that they are getting nowhere fast, Kirkwood calls the expedition to a halt. Unable to control his temper any longer, Kirkwood speaks, his voice trembling with rage.
Darn it.
We'd better get started, Professor. Maybe somebody else will find Jay Dangle.
Say, that's right. Then we'd be out of a job, wouldn't we? Oh, well, come on, folks. We might as well continue the search. Lady Gwendolyn, quit clinging to that vine.
Well, it started clinging first.
Hey, look.
What?
There's a big river up ahead.
Where?
Gee, that's full of crocodiles. Oh, we'd better make a detour, Chief.
Oh, pish tosh. They won't mind if we cross the river. They're probably very friendly. Watch. I'll just lean over the bank and wave my hand at them.
Is he friendly?
Sure. See, he's waving my hand right back at me. Well, let's make a detour.
Oh, Professor, I'm disappointed.
Well, I have a cook's tour.
This is the first time I've ever seen you afraid.
Me? Why, I'm afraid of nothing. Nothing. But when it comes to something, that's different. I'll never forget my first expedition through these jungles. I was walking through the undergrowth, and suddenly a rubber tree snapped at me.
Snapped at you?
Well, I may be stretching it a little. Anyway, I was... reminds me... I was hacking my way along the trail.
Hacking?
Yes, I had a cough at the time. You know, I think I like those just as well as the ones they're telling this year.
My, isn't this a pretty little clearing we're walking through?
Not only that, it's the only clearing in the world with a door in it.
Oh, look out! I've got to run! I've got to run!
Hey, who are you?
Just a little stalking.
Wait a minute. What's a stocking joke doing in the middle of a jungle scene?
Oh, I just thought I needed a good sock gag here.
Chief, look. There's something moving in that bush.
It looks like a boar.
Anyone we know? Oh, never mind. I don't think we can milk that one any further. I sure wish I had some milk, though.
Professor, what's that over there?
Egad, it's a cow.
It isn't a cow, Chief. It's a tiger.
Don't be silly, Harris. I know what a cow looks like. You just aren't used to seeing a cow with stripes. They're different over here. This is our chance to get some milk. You stay here. I'm going over and milk her.
Oh, boy. At last, we get some milk.
Of course, it'll take a little longer to milk her from the inside. What will happen to our two courageous explorers? Has Kirkwood milked his last gag? And what about Lady Gwendolyn? How come she always goes along on these expeditions anyway? Almost every week we ask you these same questions, and you still don't know, do you? How could you be so dumb? Well, you just keep on trying. It's good for you. Thanks, lads. That was Every Time, played by Irving Miller and his Junior Symphony. Nice bunch of kids they are, too. That's the baldest bunch of kids I've ever seen. Outside of the front row at the opera.
Did you say opera?
Ah, 'twas the glittering opera. Hushed was the throng. the headline tenor broke into song.
Say, it's only a paper moon sailing over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Yes, it's only canvas sky hanging over a muslin tree. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Without your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love, it's a melody played in a penny arcade. It's about a man's daily world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me. Without your love, it's a honky-tonk parade. Without your love, it's a melody played in a penny arcade. It's a Barnum and Bailey world, just as phony as it can be. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
That closes up another clam bake for you by the Madhouse Little Players, Singers, and Stagehands. The Kirkwood crew will be back to ball things up again soon, and, oh yes, this is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.